Welcome to Patriots Nation. It's Pat Wright. Hope you guys had a great day. Hope you guys had a great weekend. Starting off with the news of the week. First up, Trump has been named as an unindicted co-conspirator in the Michigan fake electors case. And apparently bird flu has been discovered in a bunch of grocery store milk. And then we're going to talk about Governor Kristi Noem, killing dogs, and pro-life. They all come together, so stay tuned. Out of the depths I have cried you, O Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to the voice of my supplications. If you, Lord, should mark iniquities, O Lord, who could stand? But there is forgiveness with you, that you may be feared. I wait for the Lord. My soul does wait, and in his word I do hope. My soul waits for the Lord, more than the watchman for the morning. Indeed, more than the watchman for the morning. O Israel, hope is in the Lord. For with the Lord there is loving kindness, and with him is abundant redemption. And he will redeem Israel from all his iniquities. Yes, this is Psalm 130. Hope in the Lord's forgiving love, a song of ascents. And we need to absolutely be begging and hoping for God's mercy and God's forgiveness upon this nation. Because as we are going to talk about for the main segment of the show, we care more about the lives of dogs, of puppies, than we do the lives of unborn children. And that is unacceptable in any sense of the word. Now, of course, it doesn't mean that we're pro-animal abuse. No, not at all. But in the hierarchy of importance, humans that bear the image of God, the Imago Dei, are far more valuable than other created beings such as dogs. And the Republican Party has gotten that completely wrong. But we're going to talk about that for the main segment of the show. That's a little teaser for y'all, but you're going to want to stick around for that. But yes, with this psalm, we need to, as the writer of the psalm wrote, be waiting for the Lord, be hoping on the Lord, because without that, you're going to fall into despair. And I think we're seeing that more and more among conservatives in America and Republicans, but specifically conservatives, a feeling of despair and really almost a turning towards radical solutions that are not actually going to maximize freedom in America, are not actually going to uphold the Constitution. They're simply reactionary measures against the globalists, against the communists. Of course, by reacting in such a way, your reaction becomes their action, and you continue the dialectic spiral towards, not freedom, towards tyranny. And I've talked about this before, and we'll continue to talk about this on the show, but yes. Anyway, guys, this is episode 212, and the podcast is still available on all the normal podcast platforms: Spotify, Beyond Podcast Box, Deezer, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud, TuneIn, iTunes, Amazon Music, Player FM, and of course the video show is available on Rumble, rumble.com/PatRiotOfficial, or you can watch the video show on Odyssey, odyssey.com/@PatRiotOfficial. Obviously, links are in the description below, as usual. Then, of course, there's the blog, My Fellow Patriots. It's patwrightofficial.substack.com, link in the description below. Again, you get every article that I write, as well as links to listen to every podcast episode in your inbox whenever a new article comes out or whenever a new podcast episode comes out. Which are podcasts is every Monday morning at 5:30 a.m. Eastern Time. patwrightofficial.substack.com. Check it out. Link in the description below again. patwrightofficial.substack.com. But let's jump in. Or wait, no, I have some big news before we jump to the news of the week. Starting for next week's episode, starting for the month of May, each week during the main segment of the show, I am going to be going through the rough draft, the most recent and updated rough draft of the World Health Organization's pandemic treaty, or pandemic agreement, or pandemic accords. They're using a bunch of different names. It's the same thing. And I'm going to be discussing in depth for the main segment of the shows for May what this pandemic treaty actually includes and the tyranny that is in it. I've been talking about this for like 2 years now, on and off. and they're supposed to vote to ratify it when they meet at the end of May of 2024. So like less than a month away. And so I, with that coming up and that happening in May, I'm going to be going through the most updated draft of the World Health Organization's pandemic treaty. And obviously I'm not going to read it. I don't have, there's 29 pages and to read down the episode would take too long, but I am going to summarize and highlight some key, items from that, from this treaty. So that'll be, I wanted to get that out. This would be a big thing for the month of May. But now let's jump into the main, or to the news of the week. Starting up, article from the Epoch Times, Trump named as unindicted co-conspirator in Michigan fake electors case. This was the case where Michigan's Attorney General Dana Nessel filed charges last year, 2023, against 16 alternate electors from the 2020 election. Of course, it should be important to note that alternative electors are not actually illegal, not by the U.S. Constitution and not by the Michigan State Constitution. So technically, no law has actually been broken. But an official with the Michigan Attorney General's office revealed in court this past week that former President Donald Trump has been named as an unindicted co-conspirator in the state's investigation into the 2020 election interference. Of course, the actual 2020 election interference, where we had polling places boarding up their windows and not allowing Republican poll watchers to get in, when we have video footage on camera of people pulling out suitcases upon suitcases upon suitcases of fake mail-in ballots, we're going to completely ignore that. The Michigan Attorney General is going to completely ignore that video footage, and other state attorney generals are going to completely ignore the footage from their state, and they're going to go after Trump and 16 elderly people who were alternate electors under what is being considered and what Dan Nessel's office is saying, quote, a false electors scheme, end quote. Again, by the way, false electors are not actually illegal. Because guess whose job it is to certify electors and certify votes? Yeah, that's federal Congress's job. That's the Senate's job. And so you can legally submit alternate electors. It's not a crime. But Democrats are going to do whatever they can to not only attempt to delegitimize actual investigations into voter fraud, they're going to do whatever they can to make sure that you don't do anything to prevent them from committing voter fraud and actually challenging their voter fraud. Because if the Senate had looked at and felt that there was an issue with the slate of electors that the Michigan provided, the state of Michigan itself provided, and thought there's enough malfeasance to either send the slate of electors back and the votes back to the state and have them deal with it, or choose the alternate electors. That would be their prerogative, because under Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution, that's their job. That's part of Congress's and specifically the Senate's job. But again, this is tyranny that we're living in this country, and that's why I have basically no hope for the 2024 election. Not to mention, I just saw an article earlier today. A guy who's predicted like the last like 16 elections or presidential elections or something like that. I can't remember. It was 16 years worth of elections or 16 presidential elections, whatever it was. Couldn't have been 16. Actually, it could have been 16. Anyway, he predicts that Biden is going to win, which I also think is likely. I think it is. I don't think there is not a path of victory. Ballot fraud or election fraud, voter fraud or no voter fraud, I do not see a path necessarily for Trump to win. He's becoming increasingly unpopular among moderates. He's becoming increasingly unpopular among suburban voters. You look at the polling that is being used to uphold Donald Trump and say that he is actually has a chance to is beating Donald or beating Joe Biden and has a chance to beat Joe Biden. They're coming from very, very, very small groups, very, very small pools of polling people. You're having maybe 1,000 people, maybe 1,500 people at best. You're not having mass surveys of 10,000, 50,000, a million people to get an accurate representation nationwide of where things are trending. You're getting 1,000 people here, 1,000 people there, and it's not a large enough batch to provide decent results. And that's why, especially recently, a lot of Republican pundits, a lot of conservative pundits, have stopped talking about election polls because the polls have actually not been good in the past 2 weeks for Donald Trump. Most of the polls are actually showing Biden is doing better than Trump. Just some things to consider. But moving on, next article from the Gateway Pundit, FDA says bird flu discovered in grocery store milk. Here is one way to be prepared. I don't really care about the preparedness part from the Gateway Pundit, but I do care about what the FDA is saying. Of course, it should be noted, and I think is important to mention, this could be legitimate, and it'd be bad. It could also be completely not legitimate, and then it wouldn't be bad. What'd be bad is, and what is bad is, we can't trust the FDA to tell us the truth. They lied to us during COVID. They continue to lie to us regarding treatments and different protocols around COVID. And so why should we believe them here? But according to them, in the latest avian flu development, it was announced that, quote, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration said it had detected viral particles of H5N1 avian influenza in milk purchased at grocery stores, end quote. And so, what according to a news report, this is according to a Dr. Eric Topol, who is the founder of Scripps Research Translational Institute, he said that the finding of viral particles in milk on grocery store shelves means the outbreak is probably more widespread than we've known. He said, quote, the dissemination to cows is far greater than what we have been led to believe, end quote. So obviously there are a lot of questions, and I think we have to be careful because, again, this could be legitimate. It could be legitimate. It also could become a complete hoax, just like there was so much panic around monkeypox. Remember the guys from, what, a year-ish ago, year and a half ago, give or take? There was all this panic around this new monkeypox virus. And turns out the only way to get it was to be gay and to have gay anal sex. And yes, if you're wondering about the pets who got it, Yeah, again, the only way to get it was to have gay anal sex. So the pets who got it. Yeah. Think about that for a second. But anyway, that turned out to be a nothing burger. Absolutely. It was fear porn. So could this be fear porn? Could the avian flu H5N1 be complete fear porn? It could be. It also might not be. And the worst part is we can't know for sure until something actually gets worse, until we actually have data on people getting sick, people dying, and this not just staying with animals, specifically birds, and possibly transmitting to cows or transmitting to humans, we can't know for sure. Obviously, I talked about this on the podcast a few weeks ago. A chicken company, chicken farm, had to cull like 2% of their flock, which ended up being like 6 million birds or something like that, I think it was, or 2 million birds, or roughly. Anyway, that was clearly, that was avian flu, and that had affected their livestock and their chickens, or I guess livestock would be, I guess, the proper term, I think. But do we know for certain this has jumped to cows and has jumped to humans? Don't know. But it's one of those things where, like, we can't know. And so being prepared either way is a great idea. So basic basic antiviral medications will be helpful. So maybe stock up. I mean, you should have a stock anyway. For a myriad of reasons, I think not being able to get hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin during COVID should be reasons enough to get some antiviral medications. But moving on, next article from Breitbart. We actually have some good news for once, guys. It has been a while, honestly, since we've had good news, but we actually have some good news on the podcast. From Breitbart, Tennessee governor signs bill allowing teachers to carry concealed guns in schools. Yes, Tennessee Governor Bill Lee signed a controversial bill on Friday, April 26th, allowing teachers to carry concealed handguns in school. So under the bill, SB, which is Senate Bill 1325, a faculty or staff member at a school, that would apply to janitors, at a school in the state would be allowed to carry a concealed carry firearm on the school grounds if they have a handgun carry permit and receive written authorization from the director of schools, the principals, and the chief of a law enforcement agency, as well as complete 40 hours of basic training in school policing and a minimum 40 hours of post commission approved training each year, as well as submit their fingerprints and pass a background check and psychological evaluation, which, by the way, teachers need to pass anyway. Of course, many teachers don't, and that's why we have teachers transing our kids. So clearly those standards have been laxed in a lot of places. So now, this does not mean that any teacher can carry a handgun in school. I think they should be, but they can't. But this bill is a step in the right direction, I think. And so, this, again, there are clearly requirements for this to happen. You have to be a faculty or staff member of a school. You have to have a handgun carry permit, which, by the way, in the state of Tennessee, broadly, you don't need to carry a concealed. Tennessee is now a constitutional carry state, so you can conceal carry or open carry without a permit. But that obviously doesn't mean you can't still get permits. You can still get permits. You're just not required to have permits to carry broadly. But within schools, you have to get a concealed carry handgun carry permit, and then obviously written authorization from the director of the school, the principal, and the chief of law enforcement. So you need three different signatures plus your carry permit. So this actually, I think, is a good thing. It will allow teachers to actually pass things. Now, obviously, this is still can be up to school districts. So one school district in like Cheatham County might allow for teachers to carry, while the school district schools in Davidson County, which is a neighboring county to Cheatham County, Tennessee, might not allow it. And so this is not going to be a broad statewide thing, which I think it should be. But again, this is still a major step in the right direction, and Tennessee is much, much more likely to allow teachers and to give teachers this written permission compared to a Michigan school or obviously a California school. So this is actually some good news for Tennessee, and hopefully we'll have more good news like this continue in the future. And maybe rules will be passed will make it easier for teachers to carry, as well as prevent school districts from putting their kids in danger by not allowing their faculty to carry. Anyway, next article from the Epoch Times. More bad news. And we haven't had an article like this in a while. So when I saw this headline, I had to cover it. But from the Epoch Times, Philadelphia-based Republic First Bank collapses in first bank failure of 2024. Yes. So the FDIC has entered into agreement with Fulton Financial to assume the deposits and assets of the failed bank. Yes, this is obviously in 2023, if you listened to this podcast or paid attention to the news, you knew that there was numerous banks collapsing for a good portion of 2023. There was like six or seven regional banks that ended up collapsing, mostly due to rate hikes and not being able to, for people to pay loans, not able to give loans and not able to pay off stuff. And overall panic and value going down in the banks. Well, basically, that same thing has happened for Republic First Bank, which is obviously based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And so this means 32 branches in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and New York were closed. And then they were reopened on Saturday, actually, under Fulton Bank. So there wasn't really interruption to depositors, but this bank, Republic First Bank, did it collapse. And so we'll have to see, going into the future a little bit, what happens. Because this is quite serious, and in the past has led to spirals. One bank collapses, and then it caused panic, and people start having minor runs on banks, which caused them to suffer and cause a cascading effect in 2023. And then you factor in the Fed raising interest rates, and that definitely did not help banks in the slightest. And so you saw more bank collapses because of that. So we'll have to see going into May, June, July, etc., the summer months, what happens. Are we going to see a cascading effect in terms of bank collapses? Even though this collapse didn't actually really affect any depositors, any members of the bank. It simply affected backers and owners of the bank. Think people are still word of mouth, and just news of this increases distrust in the banking system, which increases the likelihood of people panicking and pulling their money out of the banks in mass, causing bank runs, which obviously reduces their liquid assets. They can't supply the money that they need to the people wanting to deposit. People completely pull out, and banks collapse. That's a very, very quick 30,000 view. A bank collapses for dummies. Understanding of how banks collapse. There's more details I could go into, and someone in the financial world could go into a lot better than I could. But this is a 30,000 foot view of how banks collapse, and not good. Especially because this wasn't an insignificant bank necessarily. As of January 31st, 2024, Republic Bank had roughly $6 billion in assets and $4 billion in deposits. And that going under is obviously scary. And again, might potentially cause cascading effects. So we'll have to see what happens in the future. Moving on, next article from the Washington Examiner. Trump blasts RFK Jr. as, quote, far more liberal, end quote, than Democrats. Which isn't actually true. Yeah. Does RFK actually have a liberal streak in him? Yeah. But he also wants severely limit and shrink the intel agencies, mostly because they killed his dad and uncle, as well as have a reckoning for COVID. And so that makes him super liberal because, obviously, he's very much into climate change, but he also, clearly during COVID, had some sort of awakening to tyranny, and while he's obviously much more liberal than Ron DeSantis, he's definitely not as liberal as he used to be. But the other day, Donald Trump said, "I lost my cup." He said, "Quote, yeah, he was speaking about Robert F. Jr. He said, quote, "Yet despite this, he has no hope as a Democrat because they were able to use their typical fascist tactics of repression and throw him out of the party like a dog because he was taking primary votes away from the worst president in the history of our country, crooked Joe Biden." So now Jr.'s a so-called independent, but he's not. He's a radical left lunatic, but he's trying to have it all ways, end quote. Now, I think, again, is RFK Jr. much more liberal than myself is? Absolutely. Is he much more liberal than, let's say, Governor Ron DeSantis? Absolutely more liberal. Is he more liberal than Trump? On a lot of issues, yes. On some issues, no. Specifically the COVID jabs. What I think is fueling this is the same thing I talked about at the beginning of the show. The polls for Donald Trump are not looking good. And they know that. And so Donald Trump is, I think, scared that he is going to pull a lot of more independent-minded people and more moderate Republicans away from himself, and RFK is going to get their votes instead of someone like Biden getting their votes, or obviously Trump getting their votes. And so I believe Donald Trump is doing what he can to try to discredit RFK Jr., which there are legitimate means to attack RFK Jr. But blanketly saying that he's a radical left lunatic is not exactly the best means to do so, especially because he's more conservative on the issue of COVID response, than you are. RFK Jr., if you wanted to have a reckoning for RFK Jr., or for COVID, and you couldn't pick Ron DeSantis, and you had to pick between Trump or RFK, RFK Jr. is the infinitely easier answer to have a reckoning on COVID. The issue, though, is his stance on abortion, which is only a slightly more radical than Donald Trump's, and a few other issues, which he's more radical than Donald Trump. But again, there's also places that he's more conservative than Donald Trump. Like, he wouldn't have backed the idea of giving in the FBI a new multi-hundred million dollar headquarters. Mostly because RFK Jr. wants to shrink the intel agencies. Again, because I said earlier, because they killed his dad and uncle. And so this is, I believe, not a last-ditch effort, but an effort to try to win votes, and moderate votes, back from RFK Jr. because moderate Republicans who are mad at the economy, mad at Biden, are more likely to vote RFK Jr., ignore his vaccine stuff, because he's a Kennedy, and so he has that family name and appeal, but also because he's not Biden, he's not Trump, and actually has much better chance than any of the other candidates. So it is definitely a threat to... It's a threat to both Biden and Trump, honestly. But right now, Trump is acting like it's more of a threat to him. But let's get to the last article of the episode before we get to the main segment of the show. ASU, Arizona State University, Gaza camp cleared. 69 arrests made, most not students or faculty, according to officials. Yes. So for those who are not aware, there has been a wave of massive encampment protests across America on college campuses, where students, and clearly more than just students, are getting these very, very nice, expensive tents that are all brand new and all the same. Curious, ain't it? And they are staging massive, essentially sit-ins and occupations on college universities, demanding that different universities divest funding from Israeli companies and brought it the U.S. government stop backing the quote-unquote genocide that Israel is carrying out against Palestinians in Gaza. Of course, there's no such thing as Palestinians, and there's no genocide taking place. Like, there's not. Like, yes, are civilians being killed and caught in the crossfire? Absolutely. It's war, people. Suck it up. Civilians are going to die. But it's not a genocide. Israel and the IDF is, in fact, doing everything they can to reduce civilian casualties. Of course, these people don't care about that because, as people like Dr. James Lindsay has pointed out, and others like, I can't remember his name, but a guy who runs the Twitter page, Vocal Distance, the issue is never the issue. The issue is always about the revolution. Because these are Marxists. And they're gonna pick whatever solution. Is it Black Lives Matter? Is it COVID jabs and make sure everyone gets jabbed? Is it Ukraine? Is it what's going on in Gaza? The issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. And I think in the future, we're going to talk about that more. Obviously not for May. We already know what's going on for May, discussing the pandemic treaty. That is very likely to be signed at the end of May. But probably going into June and July, I think I might do a summer series talking more about Marxism and talking about this. And so this is... And the thing is, with these events, not a lot of people have been arrested. Law enforcement was holding off for a long, long time, and universities are holding off in a long, long time, bringing in law enforcement to clear these places out. Well, they have started now. And so, 69 arrests have been made. And again, the majority of the people who are arrested are, in fact, not students. And this is, again, just like Black Lives Matter, just like the whole protests and riots in 2020, whether it was over George Floyd or Kyle Rittenhouse or any of these other hoaxes that end up being legitimately hoaxes and not actually happening, are not happening in the way that media portrayed it. A lot of people who are protesting are not members of the town, of that city, or of this university. They are a lot of times paid Marxists and paid protesters. But again, the issue is never the issue. The issue is always about the revolution. And they're going to latch onto any revolution they can, or any issue they can to try to spark a revolution. It's just the way Marxists work. But let's get to the main segment of the show, discussing Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota, killing dogs, and pro-life. And if you're not on X, you probably, or Twitter, you're probably wondering, what the heck, Pat, are you talking about? What does the governor of South Dakota, dogs, and pro-life have to do with anything? Let me explain briefly. So a year ago, I think it was, Kristi Noem came out with a book. And in this book, I don't know if it was a memoir or whatever it was, don't care. She talked about having to put down a new dog that her family got because it killed a chicken and got aggressive with her. And so she was forced to put it down. And if those are the circumstances that happened, it's actually, the divide is fairly 50-50 whether you should have to put the dog down. I believe you would actually be forced to put the dog down because generally when dogs get their first taste of blood, like an animal they killed, they get a bloodlust. And they not only, this has been corroborated by other people as well, they not only are going to be much more aggressive towards you and try to kill other animals to satisfy that bloodlust, they're also going to train other dogs to do so. That can be bad. But regardless of what you think about that, there's been a huge uproar on X and huge divides over this, whether Kristi Noem is a terrible person for doing this or whether what she did was the right thing. And let me get something out of the way first. Kristi Noem is a terrible governor. She comes across in the media and in the MAGA world as a strong, patriotic governor of South Dakota, who didn't shut down her state, and has been fighting against the woke, And that's not true. Christine Noem wanted to shut down her state. The legislature numerous times said no. Of course, now she says that she never wanted to shut down the state, which is garbage and a lie. Anyone who pays attention to politics at the time or does history and research and looks back can see that she is lying, that she did try to get the state to lock down. But also, she has vetoed bills against protecting women's spaces and not allowing men to compete in women's sports and be in women-only areas. Additionally, she has refused to call the a special session for the legislature to protect farmers from a carbon capture company stealing their land via eminent domain. And she's done nothing to stop that because she is a corporatist whore. She's not a principled conservative. So now that I get that out of the way of explaining who she is, she's not a true conservative governor. Her COVID record is fake, and her other stuff is mostly just talk. There's a massive divide over whether what she did was right or what she did was wrong. And there is huge outroar. How could she take this new dog that was like 18 months old and shoot it in the head and then talk about it a positive, like, oh, I was so happy to do this kind of light, but in not necessarily as sad of a way people would have hoped for someone having to put down their dog. My issue with that is, how many millions of babies are born, are not born every year because they're murdered by the mother? Many millions. Not to mention, since the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe, abortion is not actually illegal in any state. There's some states where medical abortions are illegal, and the doctor is punished, but in not a single state are do-it-yourself at-home abortions and abortion pills outlawed. And in no state is a woman prosecuted and charged with first-degree murder for killing her unborn child. Because abortion is murder, right? The unborn child is a human being, right? So should the laws be different from inside the womb or outside the womb? No. But the big pro-life, and I mean big pro-life, like you could say big pharma, in military-industrial complex, whatever term you want to use, big pro-life has fought against bills that would completely and totally outlaw all abortions. Because necessary to do so is to punish the mother for committing murder. Now, coming back to the whole dog thing, the issue is there is way more outrage around Governor Christy Noem killing her dog than there is for abortion and for the slaughtering of unborn children, of children in the womb. There is far less outrage among Republicans and conservatives than there should be when it comes to mothers murdering their children. And I think I don't need that qualifier anymore of children in the womb. What's the difference? They're still humans. They're still children. They're still made in the image of God. And this is why abortion is not going to be outlawed anytime soon in America and probably will never be outlawed. Because the people and Republicans who are supposed to be pro-life, even people who are self-proclaimed pro-life Republicans, have far more outrage at Christy Noem for killing her dog than for, let's say, the Republican legislature of Arizona overturning the 1864 law that banned abortion procedures from doctors. Yep, because that's our priorities, right? Dogs over children. This is why America is under judgment. Again, obviously, animal abuse is wrong. But to have more outrage at animal abuse over the slaughtering of children, yeah, your priorities are not at all proper, not at all straight, if that's your mindset. Yet you don't have to like it, but it's the truth. And this outrage has continued for too many days for this dog. Get it. Again, animal cruelty, bad. But again, let's have the same fervor towards protecting the lives of innocent children as we do of protecting the life of a dog. If not, then how are we any better than the left? Fundamentally, we're not really any better than the left. We are arguing for the same thing, just slightly differently. We still, Republicans broadly, still don't treat the unborn child like it's an unborn child. No. They treat it like it's still something lesser. Fundamentally, they're not different than the pro-choice, pro-abortion crowd. They just make it sound nicer. Anyway, guys, hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please follow my podcast and share it with your friends and family. That'd be greatly appreciated. You can follow me on Gab, Clout Hub, Getter, and Frink Social, a Pat Wright official, and Truth Social, Pat Wright _official. I will see you guys next week. Remember, pandemic treaty. God bless y'all.